Hello, everybody. It's Monday. Hopefully the fucking connection stays. I don't know what the hell is the deal with this.
I know, we're getting a little bits of fucking red coming in on the stream, like it's slowing down. And yesterday, we lost the end of the show. We were pretty much done anyway.
I mean, we were done talking about the pursuit. Yeah. I was just kind of like, well, I could restart it, but fuck it. Yeah. I was just like so sick of it at that point.
They got mad at me talking bad about the movie.
I'm sure it wasn't
that.
Yeah,
it's the AI.
We weren't talking about anything, and it was doing red. It's already doing red shit. Well, it's not doing red shit right now, but it was when we had the starting
later.
Soon shit on.
It probably will later. If we lose the connection, then you'll know what happens.
Well, everybody knows what happens everybody at this point. I don't know. You know what? It's like, it's the 21st century. Somebody out here needs to get their shit together and get
we'll
some good
it,
shit going.
But then a few seconds later, it'll come back. Like,
yeah, I have a thing that says, like, to reconnect it if it goes off within. So usually I'll wait. Like, because it'll blink on and off, and I'll be like, okay, well, if it goes back to green, then it's fine. But if it starts going red, orange, red, orange, red, orange, then I usually just turn it off if it doesn't come back. But, you know, so hopefully. Yeah, so this movie right here, this is kind of interesting because this is one that I saw a lot, I think, like, back in the late 80s on cable. And I remembered a lot about it. Like, I remembered liking it, and then I didn't see it, but then I didn't see it for a long time. And then I noticed just the other day that Amazon Prime had added it, and I put it in the Patreon poll for the movie retrospective, but it didn't win, like another one won, which was actually Rituals. So we got to watch that one tomorrow night, probably.
Yeah,
but,
this is a well-made late 80s movie.
Yeah, but last night I was kind of like, man, I kind of feel like I'm in the mood for, like, rewatching this one. This one, I kind of feel like so there were a lot of movies like this that came out around this time period. I'm thinking like Angel Heart, which came out 1987.
Serpent and the Rainbow.
This is kind of like the same vibe as that, where it's just kind of like, it's not really a satanic cult per se. It's kind of more like it's Santeria, sort of. Or like, I guess it's Brujeria, like a kind of like black magic version of Santeria. So I kind of feel like there was a lot of those movies around this time period, and like I said, those ones are kind of the same vibe, so it's almost kind of like this is kind of like marginally a horror movie, I guess, but it's kind of more like what they would call like an occult thriller, I guess. Like I said, if you like Angel Heart, you probably like this, because this is Angel Heart is a little bit more fantasy based, I feel like. And it's a period piece. This one is actually set in contemporary times.
I think these were kind of a more modern spinoff. Or they were modern in the late 80s. More like a more modern spinoff of like Wicker Man. They ended up being the precursors to things like Midsommar and stuff.
This one, a lot of people have compared it to like an updating of like Rosemary's Baby.
Yeah.
In the sense that, you know, there's a satanic cult or something. Or like a black magic evil cult like in New York City, like operating under the radar. So that kind of thing. And this one also has a sort of 80s yuppie thing where it's like all these kind of like wealthy, you know, wealthy white people are kind of using this sort of Santeria kind of cult to gain power and money and stuff. So there's that kind of aspect to it as well. But yeah, so this was directed actually by John Schlesinger, who had also done, probably most famous for Midnight Cowboy. He'd also done Marathon Man. He did Marathon Man.
Another good flick.
Pacific Heights, which we need to do that one. I remember that being really good.
If you haven't seen Marathon Man, check that out. We'll do that Marathon Man eventually.
So it's the same director that
and
did
Five
that.
And 5 Days of the Condor, real similar.
Oh, yeah, man. I haven't
seen
that.
We haven't done that yet. Robert Redford's spy movie.
Yeah, I remember really liking that.
Yeah, real good.
But yeah, so it's kind of cool because even though this has a lot of horror elements to it, and the practical effects are really good, and it's like child murder and shit like that, but it seemed like it kind of attempted to make a serious thriller about it. You know what I mean? It's not overtly ridiculous. So it's like, I don't know, like the vibe of it just reminds me of like the Serpent of the Rainbow, which is like a horror movie, but it's like, it tries to treat the subject matter seriously, I guess. And even though, I guess the controversy at the time that this came out, like even back in 87, because like I said, this was still satanic panic times, but even in 87, like, some critics complained. They said, well, you know, a lot of people practice Santeria, and you're just making it look like they're all essentially devil worshippers, and that's kind of shitty. Even though they do kind of try to, like, gloss that over and say, well, it's not all this, because there is one good Santeria person, like, a couple good Santeria people. And they're like, no, it's, like, black magic and white magic, but could be forgiven if for watching the movie and say that the... Because Santeria is, like, a real religion, so...
Yeah, it's like Macumba.
Yeah. Oh, we're going red again. It's going red again.
I know. I see it. Oh. Okay, it's back.
It's back. Okay.
It's back for me.
Yeah, it's okay. Back.
Yeah. Santeria is kind of like Macumba. Brazil has that. Macumba.
Yeah.
Similar.
Yeah, it's you know, it's just kind of like similar, you know, it's kind of like the whole Catholicism. I kind of feel like Santeria is more like, you know, African-Cuban type of fusion.
Yeah, it's Africanized Catholicism. It's Macumba's the same way.
Yeah, and then it has kind of like some animal sacrifice and shit like that. But it's similar kind of thing.
Oh, Oscar Perez is in there pissed off that Antlers wasn't any good. Told you. And if I mention something bad about Antlers, we're going to lose the stream. AI's watching out for it.
Why would they do that?
They must have a vested interest. YouTube must have a vested interest in that movie.
I don't think so, but whatever.
Just let me fucking, let me.
Let you just make shit
up.
Okay.
This is entertainment. This is entertainment.
But yeah, so Holy Parish of Doom says, I can't recall Martin Sheen doing too many horror movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is really one of the few that I can, I mean, he was in Dead Zone. Yeah. You know, that's also another
that's
awesome
a
movie.
Good one, yeah.
Yeah, we did that one a long time ago. Actually, I think that the acting in this is my favorite thing about it. I just really, really liked... particularly the relationship to Martin Sheen. I mean, the story of it is Martin Sheen, he's like a police psychologist. Like, when, you know, when cops have to go through fucked up shit, like, they go to him to, like, kind of, you know, get through the trauma or whatever. So has that job. And then he has a son, and at the beginning he has a wife, and his wife gets killed in a really... either a way that is going to be, like, really kind of... Oh, my God, Pokey, what the hell? That
Pokey,
is going to be really kind of... Pokey, seriously.
Stop attacking the posters.
Oh, she, like, tore it all up.
Yeah, stop
what
attacking.
What are you doing? She's trying. She's like, you are not paying attention to me. I'm getting mad.
That was your cramps poster.
It's not. It's the paper that's behind it.
Oh, okay.
So it's all right. Gotcha. It was taped on some paper. It's not the actual poster, although you might want to take it away from her anyway, because she might get the idea that she can
do that.
See, I
see what you did. She's like, oh, I just finished it. It was already ripped. Okay, I see what you're doing.
Okay. She's like, what? I didn't do anything.
If she sees it rip, she's going to want to finish the rip.
Yeah. Well, I get that.
Now she's laying down.
Good girl.
Like, job well done. Okay. Good job, Pookie. Good job. Ripped the shit out of that shit.
But yeah, so at the beginning, and this is actually one of the scenes that I had remembered, like, from the old days, because actually, some people think this scene is, like, really funny, which I guess it sort of is, but if you think about that really happening to you, or thinking about a loved one and that happening to them, like, right in front of you, it's probably not as funny. Because basically what happens to his wife is that they're all in the kitchen, like, doing family shit or whatever, and then Martin Sheen... like, pulls the milk carton, or is pulling something out of the fridge and spills milk all over the floor, like you do. And then, like, his wife goes to clean it up, and then she notices that the coffee pot is on the fritz, and she goes over and touches the coffee pot, but there's milk all over the floor, and it electrocutes her. So she's basically just, like, standing there getting electrocuted. And I will admit that, like I said, this kind of freaked me out when I was younger, like, when I was a teenager, because I'm like, oh, man, how much would that suck, like, that fucking happening? Or, like, you seeing that happen to your mom, and, like, there's nothing you could do about it? That'd be pretty fucked up. So I did, like, remember that. But then when I was watching it last night, I was kind of like, Martin Sheen comes in, and, of course, he's, like, flipping out. I'm like, oh, my God, get a broom handle, knock her off of there. Yeah. I don't know if that would have helped or not. But yeah, so she dies. So I guess at that point, this is like the very, very beginning of the movie. And so then they lived in Minneapolis, and then they moved back to New York City, where he had gone to college, and he starts getting a job there. And then basically he gets sucked into this whole cult situation because a cop named Tom Lopez, who's played by Jimmy Smits, he's great in this too, by the way. He's not a huge part, but he's really good in it. He was working undercover with one of these cults, and I guess they found out that he was a cop, and basically cursed him. So he's kind of like at the scene where they find this dead kid with all of this, you know, cult paraphernalia. And he's like, and Tom Lopez is like losing his fucking mind because like now the cult know who I am and they're going to do all this black magic shit to me. And so, of course, they think he's a nut. So they bring in Martin Sheen's character to like be like, hey, can you like talk him down from the ledge, please? And so then all kind of shit ensues where he gets sucked into this world of this black magic, which actually does turn out to be real. I mean, you know, like he actually does end up. Because isn't his thing, like, he thinks his stomach is full of snakes. Like, that's what he tells everybody. And then when he dies and they do, he actually ends up stabbing himself. And then, like, they do the autopsy and his insides are all covered with snakes. Yeah. So he was actually right. They did put, like, snakes inside him, like, secretly. You know what I mean? Like, or magically. They did put a curse on him. It's basically this one dude, this creepy-looking dude named, what was his name? Paolo? Paolo? Something like that. And he, Stop it, Pookie.
Man, what the hell?
She is just like being... What are you doing?
Okay, I'm putting S to it. Come here, Pookie. No. Come on.
I have like a couple posters over there that I haven't got frames for yet. Yeah. And she's just kind of like, she tore off the... That was just the backing. That wasn't the actual poster.
I grabbed a red pillow and just started putting it behind her like that. When it touched her fucking back foot, she turned around and saw this big red pillow. And she went, whoa, and jumped straight up. And then ran.
Oh, shit.
Well, she knows she's in trouble. Yes. You don't have to punish her. You just have to fucking start creeping up on her. And she runs.
Well, because she knows.
She wants me to chase her.
Yeah.
She wants me to chase
her. Well, that's why she does that. She's not doing it just to be a brat. She's doing it because she's like, hey, come.
She's bored.
Yeah, come play with me.
Yeah.
Oh, Holy Parish of Doom also points out that Martin Sheen was in The Little Girl Who Lives Down the Lane. That's right. We reviewed that not too long ago, too.
About that.
I had forgotten he was in that.
Yeah, he played the pedo.
Yeah. Yeah, he was super creepy in that.
Yeah.
And you could tell, like, as soon as he came over to the house, like, with that face, I was just like, oh, man, that's a creep and a half right there. But yeah, so basically they, like, this whole, he gets embroiled in this whole cult shit. And one of the things, too, is that, yeah, Paolo is this guy who comes over and he's got, like, he's at this party with all these kind of, like, rich white people or whatever. And he starts doing this weird-ass dance, like, in the middle of the thing, and his eyes are all rolling back white and stuff. Like I said, very Serpent in the Rainbow. And I guess I didn't get this until like I read the summation of the movie, but he was trying to get that woman's necklace because Martin Sheen, like he's like his wife died, obviously, like I think it's 9 months before or whatever. And he starts a relationship with his landlady who lives across the street. And so they kind of start getting together and so then they go to this party and this guy is like trying to get her necklace. But what happens before that is that she leaves her makeup compact in the bathroom and he goes in there, like she leaves it there and then like he goes in there and kind of like touches it and like puts a curse on it. And then later when she's using it, she has some like crazy urban legend shit happen to her where that's a pretty famous urban legend where you get like that zit on your face and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger and then it busts and a bunch of spiders come out. So they do that in this movie. And when I was watching that one scene, because I remembered that part, and I was just kind of like, oh man, I forgot how fucking good that looked. Because they really had to do that. They don't have CGI. Like, it wasn't little CGI spiders running all over that poor woman's face. They really had to do that. Those were real-ass spiders. They were kind of, like, crawling up by her eye and shit like that. And I'm like, man, I hope she got fucking hazard pay for that shit. Holy crap. That was, like, fucking scary. But, had you ever seen this movie?
Yeah, I saw it a long time ago, but I forgot all about it.
Yeah. It was kind of one of those ones that, like, you know.
There were a lot of these at that time.
Yeah, I don't think it's as good as Serpent in the Rainbow or Angel Heart.
Nope.
But it's definitely good, and it's definitely worth watching. It just seems like one that a lot of people forgot about.
There was a certain genre of movies that was coming out in that period, and they came out for a while, about 5 years of these movies, maybe 6 years of them. And this is up there with them, but it's not one of the real memorable ones. If you've never seen anything from this kind of period, this genre, you want to see Angel Heart or Serpent in the Rainbow first. There's a couple of other ones that were better, too.
Wasn't there
one? This one's okay. Once you get the hang of it and what they're trying to do, they have this look and this tone and the same kind of topics. This one fits right in there with them. It's just not one of the first ones you want to see.
Yeah, it's kind of like a second tier one, but it's still totally worth watching. And like I said, I think that the acting performances are what really elevates this one. Because, like, not only is Martin Sheen great in this, Helen Shea, I can't remember the kid that plays his kid, but the interaction between Martin Sheen and that kid is really natural. I mean, they really, you really do buy that they're father and son.
Yeah.
So that kid is great. Fucking Robert Loggia is in this. He's fantastic. He's like the chief of police or the sheriff or whatever. And who else was I going to say? Oh, the guy that plays, what the fuck is that actor's name? He, you know, if you saw him, he's in everything. He's like a character actor that plays like his friend and his lawyer. That dude is also great. Like, he's just kind of like this funny, you know, and he's also very like naturalistic. So I really like all of the acting performances in this, which really, really kind of make this a lot better, because you really kind of feel for this family, and it's like there's all kind of like family drama going on with like the dad and the new girlfriend, and the kid doesn't want a replacement for his mom, and it all comes across as like very realistic. But it's not so much family drama that it bogs down the cult shit, because there's cult shit going on pretty much through the whole thing, you know, because somebody is cursed and like some bad shit is happening through the whole thing. And then it turns out too that this that kind of rich white guy who's sort of the, you know, the benefactor of this place. It's set in Spanish Harlem. And he actually, he's kind of the head of this cult. And he brought this Palo dude over from Africa, I guess. And he's like saying, yeah, what we do is every now and then is we sacrifice. Every one of them has to sacrifice their son, right? Like, they have to sacrifice one of their sons to get, like, all this wealth and power. And so he's been able to convince, like, a lot of these kind of, like, high-up elite people to do that, like, to sacrifice their own kids, like, so they can get power, like, you know, through the curse and everything. But like I said, there, it's based on a novel, which I've never actually read. The novel came out in 1982, and the novel was just called The Religion. And like I said, in this one, they very specifically identify it as Santeria, but... You know, I don't know, like, because they do kind of say that it's like, oh, you know, not everybody that practices Santeria is bad, obviously. It's kind of like, I kind of feel like that happened with voodoo a lot, like in the old days, where you'd put voodoo in a movie and everybody would just automatically be like, oh, well, voodoo's bad, even though millions of people follow that religion and obviously it's not, you know, everybody's not bad. So I kind of feel like this had a little bit of that, but it did have... the character of Carmen, who is Martin Sheen's maid, she also practiced Santeria, but she was actually really trying to protect the kid because she knew what was going on. So she was trying to do like white magic to counteract it, but she wasn't like powerful enough. But then before Martin Sheen like realized that the shit was real, he like he kind of did her dirty, honestly, because he was just kind of like, you get the get all this shit out of my house and stuff like that, like all the candles and stuff. And I'm like, seriously, I wasn't really hurting anything, but okay. And, you know, she was just trying to protect the kid. And I kind of feel like, I kind of wish that there had been a scene at the end where he went back to, because he fired her, right? That was his housekeeper. I was like, if he'd have gone back and been like, sorry, you were right. You could have your job back. Because she's like unemployed now. I don't know. That's just something that I thought of. One thing that I didn't love. I mean, I do actually really like this movie. Like I said, it's kind of like a second tier one as far as this type of thing goes. But it's still totally worth watching. And I feel like a lot of people don't really talk about it. But one thing I didn't love was I thought the end was a little too... Not abrupt. It's not abrupt, but I felt like it should have been fleshed out a little bit more, because I didn't really like the way that Palo, who was kind of like, I don't think he wasn't necessarily the main villain. He was kind of like, cause I kind of feel like that one dude, whatever that dude's name was, that
the
one
Bakur kind of guy.
No. The other guy, the white guy, the bald old white guy. Mm. Calder. Was that his name? The benefactor guy.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like he was the main villain because he was kind of like the impetus behind it, and he was the reason that Palo came there and shit like that. So it's almost kind of like Palo was like his, I don't know, like his attack dog or his helper or something like that. I'm not really sure like what you would call it, but he just brought him over there like to do curses and shit on people. So, but I didn't really like the way that Palo died or was defeated at the end. It just seemed a little bit not... I don't know. I felt like it needed a little bit more. That's all. I was not complaining too much because it's actually like a decent ending, but I just kind of thought that it needed a little bit more to it.
It was a movie of its time.
Yeah.
The audience expectations were very different. People had longer attention spans. It didn't require a bunch of yelling and a bunch of action scenes every 5 seconds, like one of these modern Star Trek movies where you Spock yelling and shit. Spock is emoting and shit. And fucking, he's yelling. Do these people know Star Trek? What
the fuck? Spock doesn't yell.
He doesn't in the new Star Trek.
No, I know, but I was just saying in the old ones. Yeah,
it's because you know
that's kind of one of
the things. Audiences today would find Spock boring, so we're gonna make that motherfucker yell and beat Kirk's ass, which that happens in the movies too. It's just fucking ridiculous. All right, Trek is Trek. Old Trek is Trek. William Shatner is Trek. All right, that's Trek. I don't want to go down for the Star Trek thing. But anyway, it was just a movie of its time. They were kind of... They took their time. They weren't slow. Not as slow as a 70s movie. But they were trying to give a lot of tone. And there was a lot of visual tone to it. And a lot of emotional tone. And they tried to do as much as they possibly could with dialogue. So the acting tends to be pretty good.
It came back.
So the acting tends to be pretty good because they were trying to do as much as they could just with dialogue. You lost me there for a second. But they were just the movies of the time. And they were real stylish when this came out. I remember when these movies were coming out. I remember when this one came out. They seemed very futuristic at the time because they just weren't like other movies from the 80s, the mid-80s. They cleaned up a lot in terms of just like how the camera work was done, the quality was better. You now had good actors doing this kind of material, because this kind of material started to become more respectable.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, because this really seemed like... Because I kind of feel like the 80s, particularly when you talk about horror, you know, a lot of it was slasher movies. Obviously, there was different types of movies, too, but overwhelmingly, it was slasher movies. And I kind of feel like for the first part of the 80s, particularly, horror was kind of seen as more like a teenage boy kind of thing. Whereas this one was kind of hearkening back to the 70s, where you kind of had these prestige horror films with actually kind of like A-list actors, and they actually took the material seriously. It wasn't just like silly, or it was an adult horror movie.
Yeah, the reason why is because it was my generation, and the guys a little bit older than me were now graduating from high school, or you now had a job, but you grew up watching those early 80s movies. So it's the same audience now grown up.
Just older, yeah.
They're older now, and they're refining everything. The old audience that they were playing to in the mid-80s and the early 80s had aged out by this time. So they're like, well, we don't have to worry about those old fuddy-duddies. We'll take our good actors and we'll fucking have them do a horror movie, because that's what the kids we were fucking with in the early 80s, they're grown up now. They got money. That's what it is. So they got money now, so they'll come see this in the theater. And they were. You were going to see Angel Heart in the theater and fucking... Rainbow and the Serpent. I saw that one in the theater.
I think I did too, actually.
Yeah, so cause we had the money to go.
That came out about a year after this one, I think.
That came out after this one. Right. Yeah, Angel and the Serpent was better.
Serpent and the Rainbow.
Serpent and the Rainbow, I mean, was Angel and the Serpent.
I read the book,
Serpent and Rainbow was better.
Yeah.
Fucking, you know, we were talking about it afterwards and stuff. It was just... This was a period where horror was starting to elevate. It was selling a lot at Blockbuster on VHS, and you could... Now get people to go into a theater and see it. Even if it was R-rated, they'd go in there and see it. And they made money. The budgets weren't as big, not like today, you know what I mean? But they would go in there and see it, and then it would be like the thing of the month. People would talk about it. You weren't competing against the internet.
Yeah.
See, so...
I thought this one made a pretty... I don't think it made a shit ton of money, but it didn't cost that much to make, so I think it made a pretty respectable, like, financial showing.
Yeah.
And I was going to say, too, that movies like this, I think it kind of might have helped... Because only 3 years later, something that was essentially a horror movie, Silence of the Lambs, swept the Oscars.
Yeah.
Only 3 years after this.
Yeah, and that never would have happened in the early 80s.
I remember being blown away. That was the year I graduated high school, and I remember being blown away by that winning the Oscar. I'm like, holy shit. That's because it's a horror movie, okay? Yep. I'm sorry, that's a horror movie.
Yeah, and that never would have happened.
They call it a thriller, but...
That never would have happened in, say, like, my parents' generation.
No way.
The movie would have never fucking made it.
Yeah.
It was just... people had better taste. Yes, me.
Yeah, I mean, that's
more
the
adventurous
thing.
Taste in things.
Yeah, I mean, I do kind of feel like I said, this isn't the best example of the genre, but I like that there were I guess it's kind of like cyclical because, like I said, in the 70s you had prestige horror movies, at least you like Don't Look Now, Rosemary's Baby, The Exorcist,
yeah,
that were not, that were, you know, adult themed horror movies that adults could go see and it didn't feel like a stupid teenage whatever. But then like in the 80s I kind of felt like horror went in a more juvenile direction, which, like, in a lot of ways you could say, like, it went in a more fun direction.
Yeah, that was
which,
fun, too.
Which, yeah, that was fun, too. It just depends on what you, like, want.
Yeah, and
out
those
of a movie.
Movies did well at Blockbuster on VHS. Yeah. They did real well. We fucking loved them.
But I honestly like both kinds, and I kind of like that you have the option for both. Because sometimes I'm in the mood for just, like, a dumbass, bloody, gory slasher movie, and sometimes you want something a little more mature, but that still has horror elements to it. And I kind of feel like this one is one of those, where, like I said, all the acting is fantastic. All, you know, it's just a really good, like, adult story, but then it has, like, a lot of really creepy... It's kind of almost more like I said, more like a thriller or like a police procedural, sort of.
Yeah, I would say the predecessor to these would have been like the early Stephen King movies. They were also kind of high caliber, even though they were low budget.
Depending on which one you're talking about.
You know, but I was mostly looking at like Firestarter and Dead Zone.
Yeah.
They were kind of respectable in their days.
Yeah.
Like, mainstream audience would see them, which was unusual for a horror movie. This movie was kind of like a more modern, from our point of view, a newer, more modern version of those.
Stephen King is actually one of those, not so much with movies, because like I said, they did have, you know, adult horror movies in the 70s, but Stephen King seemed like kind of the first guy
to break through,
who would break through to like to mainstream audiences, because prior to that, you kind of had horror was kind of like its own thing, like your paperbacks over there, and you had to kind of be into that to read them. You didn't really get a lot of crossover with just like grandmas and stuff like reading the shit, but everybody read Stephen King.
Dead Zone and Firestarters were not big budget movies, but they were excellent. If you haven't seen them, go back and watch them. They're really good.
Yeah. And I feel like we did Dead Zone. Have we done Firestarter yet?
I don't know.
I thought we did Firestarter, but I have to go back because we've done so many movies.
We saw it recently, you know, and it still kind of has kind of a low budget vibe, but it still tells that story well. And it's still entertaining to watch. If you've never seen them, you know, if you're, especially the younger generation, go see those. Those are good flicks. And if you're fans of 13 O'Clock, a lot of the things that we talked about are discussed in those. They're basically psychic abilities and the realm of the paranormal from the aspect of parapsychology. They're all about parapsychology, which back in the 60s and the 70s, that was a huge topic. You know,
yeah,
my
I remember
mom
there
and my aunts were all into that.
Oh,
shit.
Yeah.
And, you know, big universities were doing studies on it, and they believed it. And evidently, some of them... got some supporting evidence. And nowadays, that shit could all be faked. It was harder to fake that kind of stuff back then. It's just out of vogue. It was nowadays. That was something kind of like along the lines of, say, like spiritism in the 1800s. It was like that.
Yeah.
But 60s and 70s, big into parapsychology. And those movies came out of that, and they put kind of a horror spin on it. But they weren't alone. There was a lot of other movies that were like that. They were coming from the parapsychology angle, like Altered States was like that. What else would come from the parapsychology?
The angle? Changeling a little bit.
Yeah.
That kind of had a little bit of a seance-y or parapsychology kind of thing going on.
There was a lot of them, though, that were like that. So, well, Carrie.
Yeah, that too.
She's got RSPK, you know, recurrent spontaneous psychokinesis and stuff. And that was because King was into that.
Yeah.
So that was his subject matter. The Shining is parapsychology.
Yeah.
Parapsychology, basically. From a certain limited viewpoint, but yeah. Ghosts. Ghosts and psychic abilities.
I mean, and if we're talking about Stephen King adaptations from the 80s, I got to give a shout out to Christine because I kind of feel like, even though it's John Carpenter, a lot of people don't talk about that as being a really good Stephen King adaptation, but I actually really
commercially, that's probably Carpenter's masterpiece. Artistically, The Thing is.
Well, yeah, obviously. I don't think you get too much argument there.
And then I just got a real soft spot, of course, for Escape from New York.
Yeah. I do too.
Yeah.
Well, because that's an awesome movie, that's why.
Yeah, and it's just so strange.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That they made that at that time. And it's a low-budget movie that looks really, really good because they knew where to film it. It's just a good flick. And it's not an action film, and it's not... What is that? It's just kind of an adventure film, I guess.
Yeah.
Because it's not action. There's not a whole lot of action in it.
It just goes to show somehow. It doesn't have to be one thing or another.
Yeah, it's just a weird...
You can cross genres. It's okay.
Yeah. And over time, I've kind of softened up a little bit to Escape from L.A. It's kind of like a tongue-in-cheek version of Escape from New York. But it does have some good things in it. It's just, they wanted it to be very different from Escape from New York. They wanted it to be colorful like L.A. And it's like there's a lot missing in that, and then there's a bunch of stuff in there that they shouldn't have put in there. I think it's just too goofy, but they did what they did, you know? I don't think they took it too seriously. They just wanted to have fun, which I guess that's what it was.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Kevin Donovan says that led to Satanic Panic.
Yes.
Yeah, and this movie is really kind of like, well, that's kind of what's interesting about this one, too, is that it definitely trades in that Satanic Panic fear, because this is still 87, and Satanic Panic was still going until the early 90s, at least, or maybe even the mid-90s, from what I can remember. But this one, even though... It has, like I said, it has a little bit of that shade, like, oh, people that practice Santeria are bad or, like, into black magic, even though they kind of give a little sop to, no, they're not all bad, you know, because there are a couple good ones in there.
I would say Satanic Panic was directly related to The Exorcist and Amityville Horror.
Oh, yeah, big time. But
both of those stories mention parapsychology, and there's a parapsychology angle into it. Remember... the father, what's his name? The guy who did the thing for Exorcist, the guy who did the original. He mentioned, well, the parapsychologists, you know, think that this is not a real, not a real possession. That it's more like psychokinesis, or it's a mental problem, because that wasn't holy water. Remember they did that test on the demon, the so-called demon. So they knew about parapsychology, and they were linking parapsychology with the paranormal and paranormal stuff and demons and ghosts way back then. So it was just, it was the fucking gestalt of the time. You know, I remember it. It was a good time, actually.
But where I was going with that was that, now I can't even remember. I'm sure it wasn't important.
Oh, stop it.
But, yeah, no, I was going to say that this one, although it kind of does trade in that fear and outrage that was kind of all going around, like about Satanic Panic, it did actually kind of take it seriously, even though it kind of indulged in it a little bit, but it's not to a hysterical degree.
Right.
Now, if you guys, okay, because wasn't there, am I high, or was there another, there was another movie, and it was called... The First Power? Was that what it was called?
Yeah,
Lou Diamond Phillips was in it?
I remember
was that similar to this?
Yeah,
I kind of feel like, wasn't he a
like
cop
and
he was investigating like satanic cult murders? I haven't seen it in like a, like 20 or 30
years. That's what we're going to see again. I remember it being like this.
I kind of remember like conflating these two in my mind. Not confusing them for each other,
the
but
first power
putting
the
them together.
Was The First Power the one where it opens up where there's somebody's sacrificing a goat in a damn New York apartment, and it looks all fucking morbid, but then the lawyers say, hey, sacrificing a goat, boom, and then they just throw down some goat tenderloin and they say it's just livestock. You know, we do this all the time. Isn't that same movie?
It might be.
And it got into all the Macumba fucking Santeria angle. I think it was.
See, it's been, like I said, I don't want to say too much because I can't, but I remember the poster.
Yeah.
And like with Lou Diamond Phillips on it with a gun, and it had like, you know, a pentagram on it or something.
Yeah.
So I definitely remember he was like a cop, I thought.
Yeah.
I remember conflating these two. I remember this one being better, but I haven't seen that one in a really long time. And I'm not sure exactly what it's about, but I think it was like a similar type of plot to this one, maybe. It's funny too, because in this movie with Robert Loggia, and he plays the kind of the sheriff or whatever, the guy that's investigating it. I think he has a line in there too, and I kind of thought this when you saying that about the goat reminded me.
Yeah.
But he's kind of like, you know, killing chickens or sacrificing chickens isn't religion or something like that. I'm like, but you probably eat chickens though. So,
yeah.
I mean, I'm not I don't know. I don't love the idea of like just sacrificing chickens just for that. But it's like, if you're gonna eat them afterward, then as long as they're not suffering, I don't really have that much of a problem. But
I used to go to those Macumba things every now and again in Brazil when I lived there as a kid. You know, remember I told the story that my friend who was a taxi driver used to go to those things.
Yeah,
and he let me go just to see, and it was there wasn't anything scary about it. When we walked in, they had a bunch of chickens on a big old long wrought iron spike. People were going in. I don't think they stuck it on there alive. I think they killed it first and then stuck it on there, because I didn't see them actually go on. But no, to me it was obvious that after everybody leaves that he eats those.
Yeah.
That's, you know what I mean? It's, they say it's offering to the spirits, but it's more like an offering to the priest.
Well, yeah, and I mean, that's kind of like the whole thing with, like, offering to the spirits or whatever. Yeah, it's kind of like giving them food. It's so, you know.
Yeah, but in reality, you're giving food to the priest.
Yeah, well, he eats it,
I believe.
He's like, well, I'm eating it, and then, like, I'm spiritually giving it to.
Spiritually channeling all this stuff. And then he had all these girls dancing, and they were channeling. And they were just having a good time, really. You know, I mean, it's a religious service, just like any other religious service, it felt like. You know, kind of like one of those Christian state cults, or, you know, with drinking the poison and putting on a show, or shit, talking in tongues. To me, that's all putting on a show. I never believed any of it.
Asphyxium Zine said the movie you were talking about was The Devil's Advocate.
Oh,
Devil's
Advocate.
I had totally forgotten about that one. Yeah. Although I kind of feel like that one was kind of like
all satanic,
hammier.
Yeah, it's been a long time since I've seen it.
I still kind of liked it. I think I saw that in the theater, actually.
Yeah, they were all like this, kind
of. Yeah. Now that I'm thinking about it, goddamn, there were a lot of them. Around this time period. And didn't we... Oh, we also talked about The Ninth Gate, right? The Roman Polanski one, which I think came out like a few years after this. I think that was early to mid-90s.
That was a good one, too. Didn't that... Who'd that have in it?
Johnny Depp.
Yeah, yeah. It was a good movie.
And like I said, it was Roman Polanski. Not Roman Polanski's best film, but it's decent.
Still okay.
And, you know, and I'd want to read the book. But yeah, there were a lot of satanic... It's weird because... Like I said, it's all cyclical. Like, all that shit came out in the 70s, like Exorcist and Rosemary's Baby and The Omen and all that. And then it kind of went away for a while. And then the late 70s, or the late 80s, early 90s, was kind of like more satanic movies again. And now I kind of feel like we're seeing them again. Like, there's a fucking glut of possession movies. And what's that one? I keep seeing the this trailer for one that's coming out early next year called The Devil's Light. It doesn't look that good, but... Because I was just kind of like, really? Another, like, exorcism possession movie? Do we really need any more of those?
The way I remember these things going is, like you said, they started in the late 80s, and they went all the way up into the 90s, and it was about the mid-90s when they stopped. And they stopped because because of Eyes Wide Shut. That's what I think.
Eyes Wide Shut.
Remember Eyes Wide Shut with that fucking, what's his name?
Tom Cruise.
Not Tom, the director, that fucking badass.
Stanley Kubrick.
I remember this. I forget the stupid shit. When Stanley Kubrick starts going that way, he just like topped all that cult stuff, and then that was it. Nobody tried anymore.
He mic dropped, basically.
and it stopped a lot of these kind of movies. I don't remember movies like this happening after Eyes Wide Shut.
Well, it might have been
Eyes
that
Wide
they
Shut
were...
was a fucking blockbuster the way I remembered it. I remember everybody liked it. It was impressed.
I remember it got kind of mixed reviews when it came out, because I remember seeing it in the theater, and I liked it, but I didn't love it. Okay. I appreciate it more now that I've seen it a bunch more times. It's still not my favorite movie of his by a long stretch, but I like it a lot more than when I saw it the first time.
I remember people talking about it and telling everybody to see it. See, that was my perception of how it was received. I remember people saying, "Oh, that was a weird ass movie," because to a normie, it was weird.
Yeah, maybe that's why I was just kind of like, I wanted it to be weirder than it was.
I expected
it to be weirder.
To a normie, that was weird.
And it didn't seem that weird to me.
Well, that's because you were watching horror.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So to me, I was just kind of like, all right.
Mainstream people went to go see that movie and it scared them.
And they're like, what?
Yeah.
I was just kind of like, eh, all right. Yeah, so I don't know. But Devil's Advocate, that's another one that I have. That was the one with...
First Power, Devil's Advocate. What else are some other ones that we need to see?
Louis says, "I remember the First Power, cool movie." Yeah, I'm gonna see. Yeah. I'm gonna have to see that again because I remember seeing it probably a couple times on cable back in the day. But I remember it being good. But I think I liked this one better. But I haven't seen that one in such a long time. In the First Power, the villain is sacrificing a woman. Yeah. Holy Parish of Doom says another good one with Martin Sheen. His first movie, and not a horror flick, is The Incident, where he's a street tough harassing people in a New York subway. You know what? I don't think I've ever seen that. I might actually have to see that. That sounds kind of good. Yeah, Tammy says sacrificing the soul of the animals to the gods and the body to the priest. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Because you know, it's you don't want all that food going to waste.
And that shit goes back all the way to the fucking Old Testament times, because you know, records say that, you know, that Roman records say that those fucking priests were all real well fed suspiciously and shit like that.
Why are they all so fat?
Yeah, they weren't supposed to be eating that shit, but they were all fucking well fucking stocked.
Well, and I'm sure, and like I said, I would argue, it's like, well, what are you going to do? Just like sit there and let it all rot?
Yeah.
It's like, you know what I mean? That's dumb.
They were referring to like, to the ancient Jews, like in Judea, or I think that was the word that the Romans used for it. I'm not sure. It was supposed to be burnt offerings, and there wasn't one here. What's funny is that a lot of people think that in the ancient history of Judea, that there was one Judaism. No, there wasn't. It was just like the Roman religion. There was a bunch of different cults of it. They had Asherah poles, and they worshiped various gods. It was not a monotheistic religion. They had a father of the gods, but then there were all his sons and his wife and their children, the demigods. It was just a kind of like a hillbilly version of the fucking Roman religion. And they were supposed to be given burnt offerings and stuff to the god. They were supposed to burn it all up. But then some people say, well, no, it was really just the bones they were supposed to burn. Well, what happened to the meat? You know? It's just funny. Because the Romans would admit that it was okay to eat animals sacrificed to the gods. And Christians had to make new rules. And the rules were basically the early Christians were asking their church fathers, is it okay to go to a Roman's house and eat meat there? And we know that earlier that meat had been sacrificed to their gods. Is that okay? And the general response was, well, we know that their gods don't exist, so of course it's okay. Shout out.
Just eat the burger and calm down.
Yeah. They were more reasonable than people think, but they were constantly worried about what the rules were. It wasn't just the Christians. It was all of them. They were all worried about what the rules were.
They're like, oh my God, God's going to like hit me with lightning if I do something wrong.
Yeah, and everybody was worried.
What a horrible way to live.
And everybody was worried about their gods and what their gods would think. You know, and their gods' interactions with other people's gods. How did that work out? Whose gods are above others' gods? Quite fascinating, actually. Robert Price talks a lot about it. We've had him on the show before.
Well, like I said, it's not like they didn't have enough like real life shit to worry about, and then they had to stack all that shit on top of it too.
Well,
like,
that's how they saw life through that lens.
I know.
But what's funny is that they saw the world. They saw their gods kind of like the way we would see like the MCU. And DC, you know what I mean? Hey, their shit's DC. Our shit's fucking MCU. Who's stronger, Iron Man or fucking Spider-Man?
You know that's what I mean? Pretty much how I've always perceived all of this.
Yeah, you're like, well, that's two different universes. All the gods are in the fucking, they all conflicts. Came out of the Pleroma, and they're all in the heavens. Their gods and our gods, how does this shit work out? You know, which is, you would logically ask that question. If you thought
it was kind of that, or like a my dad can beat up your dad type of thing.
Yeah. Well, a lot of times they interpreted it with shit like, well, actually they're the same gods. It's just that they have different stories for the same god.
Yeah.
That's usually
they're trying to get everybody to get along, you know.
Yeah.
It's the same dude. We just named him something else. That's fine.
Zeus and El Shaddai are both fathers of the gods. It's the same one. They're just
everybody settled down.
They're just worshiping him in a different way, you know. And then you'd find temples that were fucking honored to both of those gods because they were being seen as the same god. You'd see that too. Yeah.
It is very interesting, like the histories of religion.
Yeah.
But yeah, so this movie. The Believers, they just added it to Amazon Prime like probably like a week ago, which is what gave me the idea to watch it. And like I said, I was kind of in the mood to watch it last night. And I remembered it being good, but yeah, I actually like really enjoyed it. So you know, if you liked, like I said, if you liked Angel Heart, if you liked Serpent and the Rainbow, those type of movies that came out around this time and you haven't seen this one, then go check it out, because it's actually totally, it's like I said, it's not quite as good as those, but it's totally worth watching. Like I said, I think the acting is kind of the strong point in it, and it's got like some gory shit in it too, like some good practical effects. So yeah, you know, check it out. You done talking?
Yeah.
All right. So I guess we will be back tomorrow talking about another movie, probably right around 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, as usual. So thanks, everybody, for dropping by, and we'll see you guys tomorrow.